Hi, this is Judica Illis, and you're listening to the Devil's Music Podcast.
Pantheon Podcasts presents from Hollywood, California, the Devil's Music with Pleasant Gaiman. You are invited to join the Hollywood princess as she explores her lifelong pursuits in the occult, sex, love, and that sinful rock and roll. Ladies and gentlemen, step into the dark parlor of Pleasant Gaiman as she brings you the Devil's Music.
Hi, I'm Pleasant Gaiman, and welcome to the Devil's Music, a Pantheon podcast. As the devil himself apparently once said via the Rolling Stones, please allow me to introduce myself. I'm a rock and roll witch from Hollywood, California. My obsession with music and the occult started at the age of 12 and is still going strong. During the 70s, I was one of the first punks in Los Angeles. I worked at the Whiskey A Go-Go and had a Xerox fanzine called Lobotomy, which led me to writing a rock and roll gossip column in the LA Weekly, which in turn led me to writing for every major rock publication you could think of. In the 80s through the 90s, I fronted three bands. I'm a best-selling author with 8 books out and more on the way. For the past 30 years, I've been a professional dancer who's toured around the globe teaching and performing, and you've probably seen me dancing in a number of music videos, feature films, and documentaries. I'm also an actor with several film credits. Find out more about me at PleasantGaiman.com. I'm really excited to be a part of the Pantheon Podcast Network of rock and roll shows. Everyone at Pantheon tells spectacular stories about the music we love so much, each one with a different twist. Find them all at PantheonPodcast.com, as well as on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, radio.com, Pandora, hell, I just had to say that, anywhere you listen to your favorite podcasts. If you like what we're doing here, head on over to pantheonpodcast.com and share a show with a friend, or I'll put a spell on you. Kidding.
Hi, you guys. Welcome to the Devil's Music. I'm really happy to have all of you, even though I can't see your faces the way I wish I could. I know you're all just sitting in hell waiting for stuff to happen. So here's what's happening. Today, my guest is Chip Kinman. And oh my God, we've been friends for like 45 or something years. We've been friends so long that like I forgot how long we've been friends for. But you will know him as a punk rock and rock and roll and cow punk and just all around music maven and icon. Him and his brother Tony were together in the Dills, a seminal San Francisco, then later LA punk rock band that didn't start in either city. They were in Rank and File together. Chip's been in Cowboy Nation, Ford, Maddox Ford, and his latest incarnation is a new solo double album on In the Red Records called The Great Confrontation. And I just heard a track from it, but it's it's going to blow your mind. Anyway, without further ado, here is the fabulous Chip Kinman. Hi, Chip. How are you?
Hi, Pleasant. I'm doing great. I'm really happy to be doing this. And of course, I'm always happy to see you. I've known you since 1977. So,
yeah, my math is bad, but at this point, that's probably an advantage.
Let me see. We've known each other for a very, very, very long time. It's been exciting the whole way, that's for sure.
I saw you play a bunch before we've known each other, but I think we should start. I think we should start out talking about how I used to mention you in Lobotomy Magazine, which was my 70s fanzine. Well, first of all, I remember that one of the, I think I referred to you more than once as the Dills, quote, those lovable commies.
Yes. I was a teenage communist, yeah.
I know, and the Dills were like a really political itch punk band, just like how lots of bands were from San Francisco and almost none were in LA. Like I remember like Hammer and Sickle banners and stuff like that. And
well, yeah, we tried to put it in your face, that's for sure. I mean, with records like I Hate the Rich and Class War.
We
had to look the part too. So.
The what?
We had to look the part as well. So yeah, we had the Hammer and Sickles. In fact, we had that Hammer and Sickle t-shirt that Catherine Cotto made. She was one of the original 100 Faces. Did you know her? She was my girlfriend. Yeah. And I thought you did. And it ended up with Danny Furious ended up with that shirt. And you can see a lot from the drummer for the Avengers. You can see a lot of pictures of him wearing it. And the last I heard of that, no, I think Peter Urban owns that shirt right now, that he used to manage the Dills. But Danny Furious told me a story when they opened for the Avengers, he was wearing the shirt. And Sid Vicious really wanted the shirt really bad, but he wouldn't sell it to him because he thought Sid was a bit out of control. Go figure.
That shirt was amazing. I remember too. I wanted it. Mm-hmm. We all wanted it.
It was a good shirt. Oh yeah, I remember she was sewing it. She was sewing it at home in Carlsbad, and her father walks in the room and just goes, "Oh my god! Oh my god!" Left the room. It's like, what are these kids doing?
That's such a typical thing of those days. Like your parents walk into the room and see what you're doing, which is usually making some kind of art or something. But like I remember during Lobotomy, I told before it even started, I told my mom I was starting a magazine, and she looked at me and she's like, "You're crazy. You can't start a magazine."
With scissors and glue and, you know.
Yeah, a lot of vodka.
Oh, I tell you what, we did a lot of art in our living rooms. I did anyway. I striped my guitar, the first one, you know, in the living room. I remember doing that, writing, you know, I Hate the Rich in the living room, doing my folks walking and going, I'm not so sure about this.
Yeah, me and Bobby Penn, who wasn't Darby Crash yet, were making homemade germ shirts at my house, like when I was staying at my mom's house, and we were just like, we were just splattering it with everything, with like house paint, with like fabric dye, mm-hmm. with writing on it and magic markers, like cutting mm-hmm. shit up. And
we did the same thing. In fact, Catherine Cotto, she made a lot of our clothes. She was doing the same thing. She would, with ink, or she made this one with like, I don't know where she got it, but she got like cow's blood or something and poured it all over it and then washed it. And so it was all stained with blood. It was pretty crazy stuff, that's for sure.
It's sacrificial, because it had to be cow's blood. It couldn't just be like maroon.
No. This shirt's blood, in case you don't know.
I know, we had a lot of time on our hands in those days. I think of those days fondly.
Yes, we did. But, you know what, they were good days. I mean, at the risk of sounding like an a-hole, I was thinking about this today, because I knew we were going to do this podcast. And I was, you know what? We were gods. We really were. We were like gods on two legs, you know, just owning Los Angeles, owning San Francisco. I don't mean just we the Dills. I mean you.
Oh,
you
know, everybody. The 100 Faces.
Yeah, the 100 Faces. I mean, it was, we owned it, and we knew we owned it, and we acted like it was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was really, I mean, everyone in the audience, like, I'm sure some of you are our age, and I'm sure some of you are really not, but, like, you can't even believe what a magical time that really was. I mean, now, as an elderly person, I think that when we were, in punk rock, which I always say, I say that as though, like, when we were in the Paleolithic era, or like it was its own a whole historical time during the Crusades.
Right.
You know, it's true. Well, when we were in punk rock, like, we would look back on stuff that, like, you know, the Beats were doing in San Francisco, or, mm-hmm. you know, in the East Village, or the Warhol scene or something, and just be coveting that era because it was so cool. But at the same time, like, I felt like we knew that we had a really good, crazy thing going on. And also there was, like, no, you know, people, it was so underground at the very beginning that there wasn't giant concerts. Police didn't know anything about it. It was feral. It was just absolutely feral. And everyone was doing the wildest shit.
You're absolutely correct. In fact, there's a thing kind of going around now, as far as I'm about me, I don't know if you heard about this, but Eddie Van Halen got the idea to stripe his guitar because he saw the Dills. And I've never claimed that, you know, because I don't really know for sure. But what I do know is I remember seeing at one of our first shows, I think at our first show at the Whiskey, that they were there, and I knew they were there because I didn't know them. They hadn't recorded the record yet, but they were hippies. They had long hair.
Yeah, but they were at a lot of punk rock shows. They were at
exactly. And I saw them, and I thought, well, what are they doing there? And the reason I'm telling the story is because you're saying there weren't that many of us, and so there weren't that many people at the show, but since there weren't so many, you could tell, well, there's three hippies standing over there, you know, and who are those guys? And I especially remember Lee Roth, because he's doing the total Jim Dandy thing. He has long blonde hair and a fur vest. It's
like, yeah.
In 77, who wears a fur vest? Nobody. You know, so anyway, the story kind of grew from there. That's where Eddie Van Halen got his idea to strike my guitar.
And I actually think I saw something. This is gonna sound so modern, darling. I think I saw something about that on Twitter the other day, but I was really busy. It was someone talking about how David Lee Roth used to hang out at punk shows, but there's all these mm-hmm. Van Halen threads on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So someone said, Pleasant, can you confirm, you know, or at Pleasant Gaiman One, can you confirm? And I was like, yeah, I was at punk shows all the time. So maybe that's what you were talking about. I didn't read the whole thread, but maybe that was it. If this is like the scandal that's going around now.
Well, it is. It is. In fact, New Guitar World magazine's come out. And there's like,
oh my god!
And somebody, this one fellow who does all this Van Halen stuff online, Johnny B.
Greg Renoff.
Yep. What's that?
Greg Renoff.
No, Johnny B. is what that's what his site's called anyway. And he had talked about the. Eddie Van Halen's guitar, and then he mentioned that he heard that Eddie Van Halen got the idea from me, and then he said, but I'm not really sure about the date, so if we could prove it with the dates. So I saw that and I said, you know what, I have a Holly Hobby date book from 1977 that I wrote everything down, and so I had I got it and I showed it to him. I said, well, here's the dates, here's when we played the Whiskey. I even have the flyers that we made from when we played the Whiskey. And he goes, well, that confirms it, because he didn't do his guitar till then, and you played the Whiskey then, and so there we are, you did it. And I went, well, I still don't claim it. Still, that's because I don't know, but I'd like to think it's true.
guitar war. Yeah.
It's like the Rodney Dangerfield story where the Dill set his hair on fire. You know,
wait, did you really wait? Tell me this. Tell everyone this. I don't know about this.
Oh, this is a good.
Wait, are you fucking claiming this as you really did it? No, I'm just kidding.
I'm gonna tell you why I claim it now. Okay. For I think around the time of the punk rock fashion show, somebody mm-hmm. went up to Rodney wearing a Dills armband and set his hair on and took a Bic lighter to his head and, you know, set his hair on fire. It wasn't us, it was a fan or something. Well, ever since then, Rodney Bingenheimer started saying that the Dill set his hair on fire and he wouldn't play any of our records. And for years I've been going, no, he didn't set Rodney's hair on fire, but that story was still out there and he would still say it. I even saw him once at Cantor's, like everybody else. And I went up to him and I said, Rodney, hey, we didn't really do that. And he went, ah. And, you know, the Rodney thing. And kind of, you know, I would have apologized if I had done that. That's what a horrible thing to do. But the story is still out there. And I even heard him repeat it. And so now I claim it. Yes, we set Rodney Bingenheimer's hair on fire. Why not?
And Michael Jackson copied you guys in that Pepsi commercial.
That's right, because Michael Jackson was in the whiskey when I set, yeah. I set his hair on fire. I recognize him there. I recognize him because he's the only one with a glove on.
Yeah. Okay, were you living in San Francisco when you started the Dills, or did you guys start it?
No, we were living in Carlsbad, and
that's a San Diego adjacent suburbs town for anyone.
Correct. Yeah, it's in North San Diego County part. And of course, San Diego is like just dead, and there's really nothing to do, nowhere to play there. So we started coming up to Los Angeles, and as you know, around that time there are bands like, you know, the Pop and the Zippers and all those kind of bands playing. So we figured there were places to play. And you know, I think our first show up here was at Gower Gulch, you know, with the Nerves.
One of those shows.
Yeah, we played one of those shows. And so then we decided to, we had a lead singer at the time, and then his father lived in San Francisco. So we thought, well, let's go up there and see what's going on. And we just thought it was there wasn't much more of a scene yet. But we thought it was a really neat city, so we decided to move up there.
Okay, good. We're going to take a little musical break right now and listen to Class War by the Dills.
Yeah.
Okay, hi, we're back. So did you just like immediately start playing up there, or did you change other personnel, or what went down with that?
Well.
I always think of you guys with the Avengers like together a lot. Like maybe it's just because you two were my favorite, like San Francisco.
Yeah,
Avengers and the Nuns.
Yeah, we were pretty simpatico. Actually what happened is we moved up there and then we came back to Los Angeles or to Carlsbad, and we got rid of our lead singer and asked our roadie or a friend of ours to be our drummer, Buddy Haight. And then we moved back to San Francisco. And when we did, actually the first time I went to San Francisco, we were walking around the city and we saw a poster for a band called the Nuns. They were playing at some restaurant down in the marina, and we thought, well, the Nuns, that's kind of a neat name. So we went down there to see them, and I think they got fired during their sound check. You know. and so they put up a piece of paper outside the restaurant saying, look, you know, we got fired to sound check. If you want to see us, we're at a rehearsal studio south of Market. So we went south of Market and went to their rehearsal studio, and we were the only ones there. It was the Dills watching the Nuns. And so they went through their set, and we're watching them going, these guys are really cool. And we became fast friends then, really close friends. And I remember there was a crime poster on the wall, because crime was there too. And the Nuns hated crime. I don't know if they always
hated crime. I hated crime.
Yeah. And they just hated crime. And so they pointed at the poster and said, oh, those guys suck. They're another band here on the scene. They're horrible. They're horrible people. And the music sucks. So we were eating sunflower seeds at the time. So of course we started spitting our sunflower seeds, crime, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And then of course I saw crime and went, wow, the most out of tune, awesome, weird punk rock punks who dress like cops. Come on, you know. It's...
No, I know. I mean, I think maybe now in hindsight, I might like them just for the audacity.
But that happens, you know. It's like I didn't like the Germs. I think that's well known. I didn't like Darby Fresh. In fact, the only time I ever was at Disgraceland was. I had heard Darby Crash was like bad mouthing the Dills or something like that. And we were near, and so I went to Disgraceland.
You guys that are listening, that's my punk house and that housed everybody and everything for 10 years of punk and cow punk and like, you know, radio music, et cetera.
It was the place. And I remember I went there because I heard he was there, was going to be there or something. And he was. And I got in his face and I went, you know, don't ever say anything about the Dills. And, you know, just not, I mean, I've never done that before in my life. I don't know that I threatened him. I think I was just mad or something. And that's that. But in retrospect, I like the Germs now.
I
can see their value.
What?
You know, I can see what's good about them. And I mean, I was always friends with, I didn't know Lorna too well.
She was great.
I didn't know her too well, but of course I knew, you know, everyone else in the band.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here, taking a break from listening to a little Shouted Out Loudcast episode. Love Tom and Zeus talking all things Kiss. Of course, I was listening to them on my new Raycon wireless earbuds. They have quickly become my go-to earbuds because of the comfort. These soft tips are the best I've ever used. And at this price, plus a Pantheon discount, Raycon is really hitting on all marks. Sound quality is great too. I really love having these three EQ options because I like more bass in the music, but less in my podcast. 8 hours of playtime for the battery is great as well. Surround sound, noise isolating, and awareness mode are all included. These are great earbuds. Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order plus free shipping. That's right. You'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Did you know about White Girl and Lorna? White Girl by X? You don't know this story?
Oh yeah, of course, yeah. Is that about her?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Because there was rumors going around that it was hi John Doe. Sorry. Me and Chip are saying hi to you in a National Enquirer kind of way. when the song came out, there was like rumors going around, you know, that was about Lorna and like, you know, like I think we were also drunk most of the time that no one was really gossiping that much or, you know what I mean? But anyway, I was staying at John and, Exine's house that was, on Genesee when they I stayed there for a couple of months when they were like on the road or something. And then when Lorna and Melissa, who cut everybody's hair in the punk scene, if Connie Clarksville wasn't cutting it, those were the two main hairdressers. They lived right up the block and suddenly all the lyrics got put together for me. And then I asked Belinda because like I met me and Darby and Belinda and Laura all met waiting in the Beverly Hilton lobby waiting for Queen to come down in like 1975, I think. Yeah. But so that was how I discovered that wasn't a rumor, but anyway.
That's awesome. Yeah. I didn't meet the front line of punks in Los Angeles until, when the Ramones came, their first tour. That's when, and I remember being at the Golden Bear in Huntington Beach, and leaning against the stage, waiting for the Ramones to come on. I looked to my right, you know, and I looked to my left, there's Kid Congo, and, you know, and we looked at each other and went, did one of those, you know. It's like, you know, like Mormons and homosexuals, they always know each other, they can always tell.
Yeah, no, I know.
So it was like that, okay, all right, that's good. So, That's when I first
met. From a mile away.
Yes.
So and nowadays you can never tell. I always say that to people, like you can't tell who someone is by the way they look for decades now. You know what
not
I mean?
Hard. No, you can't.
The audience is going to write in and tell me that I say this all the time. Because I'm a feeble-minded old lady and I'm repeating myself. Let's take a break and we'll be right back. Anyway, then I think people got kind of shocked, or maybe not shocked, but when cowpunk started coming. Mm-hmm. Wait, do you want to talk more about Dilsey stuff before we jump into
That's all right. I mean, you know, we made Punk Rock Revolution. It was great. And then, you know, the part of the trick is knowing when the party's over and getting out. So that's what we did and went to and looked for something else to play, some other kind of music where we could raise some hell and raise some eyebrows at the same time. So we thought, well, let's play country music.
It's weird that because I wasn't even trying to do it like in a different way, because the only other band mm-hmm. I was in was the Cyclones with Jeffrey Lee, but mm-hmm. me and him and also Kid and everyone we knew used to listen to like fucking Bob Wills 78s and old rockabilly. Yeah. Like me and Kid had a we used to, before he was in the Cramps, way before, we'd walk into their dressing room at like CBGB's or mm-hmm. you know, this whiskey or whatever the fuck they were playing. Yeah. When we had just discovered an original, like obscure single that was one of their songs. Do you know what I mean?
Sure, of course.
But so we were all into old records. This is something that you guys out there in podcast land might not know about, at least the LA punks. We fucking loved the oldies and old records. Because it was way better than the garbage on the fucking radio.
Pretty much. When we, you know, speaking of that, when we first moved to Austin, Texas to like, you know, get real with country music, we would have parties at our house and all the Austin punks would come to our parties and we'd be playing country music or like, or the Bee Gees, you know, Saturday Night Fever.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. And the punks would freak out, the ones in Austin, because to them, country music was the enemy, you know, because they were in Texas and country music was the enemy. And then, you know, and here it's the Dills and the Nuns, because that's, you know, Rank File was a mixture of those. We moved to Austin, so everyone thought, big West Coast punk rockers. And then they come to our parties and are playing country music. They were, I don't know what's going on. You know, we were persona non grata. We got a gig at the biggest club, the biggest like new wave club in Austin at the time, this place called Club Foot. And they hired us on the basis that we were in the Dills and in the Nuns. And we came out as Rank and File and we were playing, you know, don't diggy don't diggy don't diggy don't diggy. They said, get the fuck out of here.
And really? They really said that?
Yeah, they didn't have us back until we got signed to Slash. They just said,
oh my God.
So we had to play like really weird honky tonks. We had a gig. We were playing every Sunday at this place called the Shorthorn. We had to do like five shows. And then we were playing for like four Snuff Queens. Nobody came to see us. And then eventually a couple college students came, and then a couple more, and then it became a thing. So, but it was, like punk rock, it was a tough road to hoe. You know, yeah. nobody wanted to hear it. Nobody wanted to know anything about it. You know, they thought it was that's not music. But hey, maybe they were right.
I always hated the label cowpunk, and I think so did everybody else that was called that, like Annette from Blood on the Saddle, who mm-hmm. was, you know, who me and her were trying to start a band, and then she was in the Sirens for a little while after the Bengals, and you know. Mm-hmm. And Tex and the Horseheads. I mean, all of us, you guys, I'm trying to think, there was a ton of others, especially around the LA, that like, because it wasn't trying so much to be super country, because it was coming through our own filter, but somehow the cowpunk thing just like, I hated it. And so did you not like that label?
Yeah, we always just called it country music and let the chips fall where they may. But you just said the important word is through our filter. We thought we were playing country music, but we weren't really good enough to play country music. We were punk rock musicians. I mean, country players are really good, you know, and we were punk rock musicians. And so we played what country music sounded like to us and how it translated into our hands and what came out. I mean, that's what came out. But it was another good, like a musical revolution was a fun part, fun to be part of.
Yeah. But I'm going to tell everyone about the wildest gig that we ever did together, because we started playing. Well, also my band, the Sirens, we didn't. I wanted to have a country band, mm-hmm. and I wanted to have like beautiful 3-part harmony, which it was when we were either rehearsing or on recorded on a record, because it never sounded like that on stage because of the hellish equipment and the malfunctioning amps and all of that. But
not so beautiful.
It basically sounded like the Ramones with the Andrews Sisters playing, singing, and a lot of like burping into the microphone and shit.
Oh my gosh.
But do you remember when we played together, you guys in the audience, Rank and File and the Sirens played together in Sacramento at Club Can't Tell, was it?
I don't remember the name of the club.
Were you guys on a tour? Because we were on a tour.
Yes.
I can't remember what direction either one of us were going on because we weren't touring together, but that gig was so fun because and I don't even remember how we started this, but we scared all the people that were there to see and hear Cowpunk. Because you remember our encore that we did together?
I do not.
But, oh my God, you're kidding me.
I don't know if you're going to tell me the same story that I'm thinking of right now, but keep going.
Okay, because I don't remember exactly how this started. I think it walked in. I was already singing it like OCD style all day in the dressing room. And I just went, I keep calling Dr. Love. And you and Tony immediately looked up and said, I'm the doctor of love.
That's like what we would do.
No, I know. And then I was just standing there with my mouth open and like some of the other girls saw it, and then somehow we wound up doing that for an encore and people were appalled. It was you and Tony were doing like the whole fucking like headbanging kiss thing together.
Oh, yes, Jesus Christ, I don't kiss. Now, but then
go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I remember doing a show with you guys. I think it was probably Zero or one of those little clubs down, you know, in Hollywood. And I don't remember, here's the part I remember. I don't remember whose set it was, if it was ours or yours, but I remember somehow I ended up lying on the stage. You were on top of me.
I was?
Yeah, I was lying on my back. You were on top of me with your mic singing right into my face. And I remember lying there going, wow, what's happening? I don't know why you're on top of me. I don't know what we were singing, but I remember that. It was so hot and so sweaty in there. So we were making a sandwich on stage.
Oh, God. Wow. Wait, whose set was that during, yours or mine?
I don't remember.
or somebody else's.
Yeah, you know, it could have been yours because if I was just lying on stage, you were singing it. Yeah, if you were singing in my face like that, and I didn't have a guitar, so it was probably your set.
Yeah, and because shit like that always happened in my set.
Not so much in ours, no. No, I was lying on top of Tony singing this.
I used to bite the buttons off guys' shirts with my teeth. Like, I'd tell them to come up the stage, and I'd bite them off. And then when I was done, I'd like spit them out like do 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 like a machine gun. I'm surprised they still have my teeth, honestly.
I'm surprised you still have your lips that you didn't get pierced with them. Oh, you mean buttons from shirts. Oh, I thought okay.
I think we should take a break now to cleanse our soul. We're gonna take a break to cleanse our souls and we're gonna listen to The Conductor Wore Black by Rank and File.
I caught the train at the station on the tracks to the right. It had an engine as old as the moon. With my ticket in my hand, I waited for the man. The whistle, it howled out of tune. Well, the brakeman did his job.
Back, we've anointed ourselves with holy water and the statute of limitations, because we can talk about this shit now.
indeed we can. Some crazy stuff.
Yeah, all the time it was crazy, like with no matter what. But so how much did you guys tour in rank and file? Did you go overseas and stuff?
Yes, we did. We toured America and Canada constantly.
Yeah, same with the Sirens.
Constantly. And the only time we made it over to Europe, we did a 14-date tour with Elvis Costello, but all in England, And it's the time he did the Every Day I Write the Book, that record, and he was playing like ballrooms. And it was a lot of fun. We were treated really well. No one in England knew who we were. No one had any idea who we were. So lights would go down, the crowd would go, yay, start roaring. We'd walk out, the crowd would get instantly silent. And then for 20 minutes, you know, we would do our thing. And then we generally, except for like a couple cities, we'd go off to a polite applause because people just didn't know what to make of us. And that was a lot of fun. And while we were in England the same time that the Go-Go's were
there. I was just going to ask you about that. Yeah.
Yes. They were recording one of their records, and they called us up at our hotel and asked us if we wanted to come hang out with them, because we were based in London while we were doing this tour. And no one wanted to but me. I said, yeah, sure, I'll come over. So I went to their hotel, and it was fairly early in the evening, and it was just me and I don't remember which members were there. Of course, I know Belinda was there and Jane, and I think probably some road crew or management. And we sat around kind of in a circle, you know, drinking. Hey, you know, glad to see everybody. And at the same time, a plate of drugs passed around.
Mm-hmm.
And it passed around, and it passed around, and it passed around until about 3 a.m. And finally, everyone goes, oh, okay, I'm going to go to bed. And Jane said, well, look, you know, your hotel's kind of far away. If you want, you can stay in my room. And I went, oh, yeah, sure, let's go. So we go up to her room and we get into bed. And Jane turns to me and says, well, I don't want to fuck tonight. and I looked at her and I thought, thank God, I just snorted a pound of cocaine and I'm not going to get a boner for a year and a half. So I'm so glad she says, want to fuck. So I guess we managed to fall asleep somehow, and we woke up the next morning and had the most delightful breakfast. It was hotel, and I said goodbye and everything. But that's a story that stuck with me. I love the I don't want to fuck tonight line. It's like, okay. I'm so happy.
No, that's as bad as like one time I woke up next to Mike Mart, and like the whole house was trashed. There was like, you know, just like broken bottles and stuff everywhere. Right. And I looked at him and I was like, I was trying to be polite. I was like, did we like have sex last night? And he looks at me and he goes, well, what a coincidence. I was just about to ask you the same thing.
Oh, Lord. It was hard to tell sometimes, that's for sure. That's for sure. But a combination of, you know, of the 70s or early 80s and being a punk and drugs, who knows what could happen.
Yeah. I know, bands, being in bands.
Yeah,
as long as you haven't let anyone else sing on top of you, I don't care what you do.
Yeah, don't get jealous, please.
I'm not. You're kicked off. Goodbye. We're ending this episode right now. No.
There you go.
Okay. So, what other kind of, like, tell me about, like, just how how your whole, I mean, everything that you do or that you've done, to me, it seems like it makes perfect sense. Also, I just have to tell you guys, Chip is wearing a trucker hat that says cock on it with a rooster. I think it's from a Loteria card. Is it? Maybe.
I think it probably is.
But it wouldn't have said cock on that, but still.
Yeah,
I know some boys that would kill you for that.
Well, sometimes I wear this with my Sex Pistols wiener t-shirt, and it's like way too many wieners. So it's gilding the lily, if you will. So I have to be careful. I thought it'd be good for the show.
Yeah, you put the punk and cow punk, daddy. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Well, I think what you're getting at before we start about cock was...
Wait, I wasn't the one that started talking about it. I just talked about the cat.
Busted. Tony and I went through a lot of changes, that's for sure, musically, and they did make sense. They did make sense at the time. None of them were too difficult, you know, at all for us. It always felt natural and like the right thing to do, because we were always kind of like three records and out. You know, the Dills was three singles and out. Rank and File, three albums and out. And then our next band, Blackbird, same thing. We did three albums, and yeah, we pretty much said what we wanted to say. And Blackbird's funny, because it was actually one of our most popular bands, and it was so nuts. It was so, we tried to make it as anti-showbiz as possible. And I think we did a pretty good job of it.
I liked how it was. I think also we played with you once. Maybe I'm crazy, or maybe I just saw you one time in San Francisco doing that.
We could have played together.
Or somewhere else. It was either like
Raji's or something. We played Raji's.
No, it was out. It was out of town somewhere.
Out of town.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Well, we went on tour with Mike Watt, and you know, it's we took it around the country and had a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun to play with just me and Tony and a drum. And we did have a fake drummer for a while, Snatch Mo X, and we would have, because we had a drum machine, so we told her, whatever you do, just pretend you're playing a simple beat. She wasn't really playing the drums, so we had the drum machine blasting out of the PA. It was so funny, because people, especially when we played colleges, they would come up to the front of the stage and they'd look at her and they'd listen to the song, they'd look at her, listen to the song, and then you see some of them getting all mad. She's not really playing drums. Well, of course she's not. It was so much fun. Yeah, I love
that's it. Really good. That's like all the scandals that there were when people were singing to recorded tracks.
Yeah, she's not playing drums. It's like, yeah.
All right, now we're gonna listen to "Howl" by Blackbird, and this is about someone that was something somewhat notorious in the LA scene, and we can talk about that in a minute. You want to spill the beans on that song or no?
Yeah, sure I will. I think this might be the first time. Tony at the time was dating Inger Laurie from the Nymphs.
Wait, I didn't know they dated. Jesus.
Yeah, they lived together.
What? How did I not know that? Maybe I just blocked it out because of Inger. I'm going to have to go under hypnosis to see if I have any memories of this.
Right. I mean, it's very possible. I don't know how much they went out in public together. Probably plenty, but they lived together, and I think they had broken up at the time. And Tony wrote kind of two songs about her, or about their relationship. One was the song "Howl," and the other was a "Quicksand." And it was definitely an explosive combination, those two. And I remember once we had a white van that we would travel around in. They had a fight, or maybe they'd even broken up. And Inger took spray paint. It was a long van too, like a, you know, Baptist church van or something. And Inger wrote in spray paint all the way down the side of the van, "Cunt Eater." And so, of course, we named the van Cunt Eater.
Cunt Eater.
And then I started thinking, well, is that a bad thing? I'm
not so sure. I was just going to say, that sounds like good advertisement to me if you're a single man on the road. Jesus.
Right. And so we thought we should take that off. We should take that off the van because, you know, it's, I can't drive around with a, cunt, 6 feet long down on the side of your van. So we got some light sandpaper and sanded it off. But then it just rusted where we sanded it. So it said "Cunt Eater" and rust down the side of our van. It didn't help the resale value. It might today, but it didn't then, let me tell you. We got two great songs out of the relationship. So there you go.
Yeah, I know. Like, so that's always the bonus of bad breakups. But Tales of Terror, do you remember them? From Sacramento, that band Tales of Terror.
I do, yeah.
Okay, they used to stay at my house, Disgrace on the lot, but on the side of their big long van, it said in huge thick letters, "Pull me over, I'm drunk." Which was true. You know what I mean? I was like, I don't know how they're not like still in San Quentin or something. So. Yeah,
right. That either got to pull over more or less. Cosmo, no, they can't be drunk. They wouldn't put that on.
One of their band guys went on tour, and the only thing he brought with him was was leather pants and a blender. He didn't have his instrument. He didn't have an amp. He didn't have a jacket. He didn't have t-shirts.
He didn't have shoes, but he had a blender.
He had a blender so he could make margaritas.
Awesome. That's my new hero.
No, I know. That was Lion from Tales of Terror. So good.
We're going to hell, wasn't
it? I know we are. I already have, like, I got the VIP parking set up and all of that shit. You're welcome, guys.
I get a ride with you.
We're all going to hell in a safety pin festooned hand basket. Okay, so before I ask you about your latest musical project, tell me what kind of weirdness you've witnessed in the pandemic.
The weirdest thing I witnessed in the pandemic, it's when we had like the 2 weeks of actual lockdown.
Yeah.
Where you weren't supposed to leave your house. And Lisa, my wife, and I, we were here in the house, and we heard this like crazy popping sound. Really loud though. Loud enough that we had, well, what's going on? So we looked out of our back door, and we have there's a step down station about half a block away from, well, it's the next block over. And that step down station is where the electric power comes in, goes into all these transformers, and steps the power down. Well, it was the transformer that's getting ready to explode.
Yeah.
And so we thought, well, let's go out and look at it. So we went out, and there was a big crowd, but everyone's really nervous, going, "We're supposed to be in our house. Oh no, what's going on?" And then the thing just went kaboom, exploded like nuts. I mean, it was like mushroom cloud and everything. And we're all just going, everyone's saying, "This is so cool, let's look at it." And then half of us are going, "We got to get back in the house, we're going to die from COVID, not from the
explosion.
No, that's not going to kill us. So we all run back in the house and stuff. And that was probably the oddest thing. Other than that, you know, just trying to get in the grocery stores and all that kind of business, you know, when it's really tight. Right now, I had a gig for what I'm doing now, the music I'm doing now, that I canceled because they made it vax only for the show. Now, I'm not anti-vax.
Was that going to be here?
It was going to be up north. And I'm not anti-vax. In fact, I'm vaccinated. My wife's vaccinated. All that's fine. But I didn't feel right about playing a segregated show. It just seems strange to me. So
that's the lovable commie in you. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Always just lovable. Yeah, I just didn't really feel good about that, so I demurred.
Now there's so much crazy stuff like that happening. Mm-hmm. Like LA just is having a new mandate that starts in like either October or November, I think.
For vaccination.
Bars and clubs and stuff like mm-hmm. that. It's gonna be vaccinated. Yeah. Or something.
Lisa and I we were in Atwater the other day and we wanted to go to that Chinese bar in Atwater. It looked kind of cool.
The TE, Club TE,
and we walked in and they said, oh, do you have proof of vaccination? And no, you know, we came in with our masks and stuff, and so, you know, we thought maybe we had pictures of our cards, but we didn't. And so we just got out of there and went to the street. You know, it's really bizarre. It's really, I think that part of the whole lockdown thing is really odd.
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah, a little discomforting.
Yeah, I think, well, there's a lot of stuff like that. Like also all the government orders, like saying one thing and then backpedaling 2 days later and then changing it again. It's like,
yeah,
it's weird.
It's strange.
But anyway,
it's strange.
People just want to hear more stuff about like rock and roll and sex. So we're in a happy space of rock and roll and sex. Right?
I know, we've been laughing so much.
And paranormal. Have you had anything paranormal or witchy happen to you?
Well, we bought property in Landers, Landers is where the Integratron is and Giant Rock.
Oh, you did? Oh my God.
Right across from Kim White, Kim and Alan, you know, Alan Taylor and Kim White, right across from them, about 5 acres out there. And we're close to where the UFOs come in.
I was just going to say that's a full alien landing pad out there.
We tried to get our license plate to say Landroid, but there's too many letters. So I don't count L-A, it's too hard.
Maybe L-N.
I think we tried every combination. It was either taken or we just couldn't do it. So instead,
we'll just take some fucking electrical tape and make the last D. Just like
I did it in 1977.
Go back to your roots.
And the new Eddie Van Halen will steal it.
You know, Eddie Van Halen's limo's gonna have shit like that on it.
Yeah, say Landroid. What the fuck? But you asked about my newest thing.
Yeah, your newest thing, and then I think we gotta blow this pop stand.
Sounds good. I had the perfect lockdown gig. It's Larry Hardy gave me a record deal from In the Red Records. He said, do whatever you want, just make it weird. Or keep it weird. And I went, oh, I can do that. So I borrowed from Brian Cahew, I borrowed a 1970 Moog synthesizer that I don't know how to play keyboards. I don't know how to play synthesizers. So I borrowed it and set up the tape deck that we recorded all the Cowboy Nation stuff on, and an 8-track reel-to-reel tape deck. And locked myself in there for a while and came out with a whole lot of music. Lots. And it's just me and that. And I sent it all to In the Red Records and said, here, you pare it down to make one album, you know, because I sent them a whole bunch of music. And they called me back and said, well, this is terrific. We want to release all of it and as a double album. So that's what they're gonna do. So it it's kind of like an electronic Americana album, Ameritronica, if you will. It's I'll say it's Americana only because it comes from me, and there's, you know, I do a cover. In fact, I think that's what you're going to play. I do a cover of Will the Circle Be Unbroken, and a truly unlistenable version of Danny Boy. I took like the most beloved song in the world that everyone can hum, and it makes grown men cry, and I made it completely unlistenable. And I think my work here is done.
Can I ask you a favor to just drive the point home? Are you going to play live with any of this stuff?
Yes.
If you're gonna do Danny Boy, will you just like take a cue from Crime and wear a cop outfit?
Wait till you hear it. I'm going to get arrested when people
play at Irish bars.
I will, because it's going to become the new standard version of Danny Boy. I did. I've already played one show. In fact, it was in Landers at Kim and Alan's place. They held a private party, and it was kind of like the post-COVID thing, even though we're in COVID still. But
yeah,
they had a private party, and I played, and I wasn't really sure how I was going to be able to reproduce it, but I did, and it was great, and it was loud AF, and just in your face, and everyone really enjoyed it because it's not an EDM sort of thing. You know, I don't stand and go, oh yeah, like this. In fact, I tried really hard to not like move at all. And just, so I think I sent you a picture where I'm sitting there.
Yeah, you did. Yeah.
And so I tried to just kind of sit there and play, but there are some times where it was really hard not to go, fuck yeah, that was really good. You know, when it gets really loud, like, yes. So hard not to do that. And I tried not to. Maybe by the time you see me, I'll be my perfect, was it Ron Mayall? Was he the from Sparks?
Yeah,
which is the one that just stands there, Ron? Yeah.
Or someone in Kraftwerk or something.
Yeah. Oh yes, yes. How many Kraftwerk look like?
Like showroom dummies.
Yeah. There you go. Well done. Like very clear. I met him. Oh, we can close it out with my Gary Glitter story, if you will.
Hear that.
We were on tour with Elvis Costello, and we were playing, I don't know, Brighton Beach or something. And so we were traveling on his bus. So after the show, we all get on the bus. We're getting ready to leave, and Gary Glitter hops on the bus. And they're all going, they all know him. They're going, hey, great to see you, all this kind of stuff. They're glad him. They're all talking, and he saw what a great show it was, and all that. And the second he gets off the bus, I go, fucking wanker, fucking hate him, fucking wanker. And of course, I'm sitting going, it's getting loud, rock and roll part two. Oh my gosh, that was my Gary Glitter.
You fucking wanker, you fucking cow.
Fucking wanker.
He's a wanker in it.
Look, we're back to wankies and wieners. Hey, it ends as it begins.
Okay. on that note, maybe we should close. If you guys want to pay $20 to my Venmo, Chip and I will record an uncensored. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, we'll do it with you laying on top of me. We'll do it.
Oh, yeah. Chip and I are starting our own OnlyFans.
I am down.
It was so good to talk to you, Jim. It was so good.
Likewise. It was tons of fun. And let's do it again.
Oh, we will. And you guys, just to reiterate, that was the amazing Chip Kinman of Cowboy Nation, Rank and File, The Dills, Ford Maddox Ford, and now The Great Confrontation. And soon to be on OnlyFans. You can get a real taste of it. Okay, on that note, I'm going to kiss goodbye to you, Chip, and everyone in the audience. Bye.
Bye.
The Devil's Music is written and hosted by Pleasant Gaiman. Produced by Aaron Alden. All sound design by Jerry Danielson of Busy Signal Studios. And of course, is part of the Pantheon Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at pantheonpodcasts.com. Our social presence is at Pantheon Podcasts on Facebook and Instagram. Tweet us at Pantheon Pods. All songs can be found wherever you get great music. Please pick up these important and fantastic tracks. It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.